Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Now you're in full-fledged crisis mode. If you thought last week was bad, it was a kind of a shock to their system.
Full responsibility. Full responsibility for that.
Yeah.
I think this week it's settling in that this is a problem, and this may be the last Sunday that you look at optimistically if you're the Bears.
Well, I think you feel like you're going to win this game. Not because you're good, but because they're so bad.
They're bad.
What I would say is, look, we're a soft football team across the board.
But they also, they've got a rookie quarterback that is trending in the right direction, and you're the Bears, and you've got a rookie quarterback that is leveling out.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Gather ourselves and get back to work. We got a home game against New England Patriots. We got to get a win for sure. It's a must win.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Good Friday morning, everyone. Mully is out today, but we are going to have a great show. It is a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. We've got Bulls blowing the lead. We've got the Blackhawks losing again back-to-back. We've got some baseball. John Heyman will be in studio. But we've got Bears-Patriots on Sunday back at Soldier Field along the lakefront. Dare I say, Caleb Williams v. Drake May is not going to be Joe Burrow versus Lamar Jackson. But boy, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be fun if we could look ahead to a quarterback matchup that would come even close to what we saw last night in Thursday Night Football? Goodness sakes. Let's start there. Goodness sakes, what was that? That was a video game in the fourth quarter. You had Ja'Marr Chase having as dominant of a game as any wide Ja'Marr Chase with as dominant of a game as any wide receiver is going to have. Joe Burrow playing at an MVP level. But Lamar Jackson is also playing at an MVP level, the reigning MVP. And his fourth quarter is like, if one of the quarterbacks I've mentioned coming in, one of the rookies plays this well in the entire game on Sunday, you'd be happy if you're a Patriots or a Bears fan. Lamar Jackson had 197 passing yards and three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. 158.3 passer rating. Lamar Jackson had 71 yards passing at halftime. It's like he gets bored. I don't know. I don't even want to say he gets bored. He has the ability to flip a switch, and all of a sudden, he can't be stopped. Then Joe Burrow. Quietly, he's having an MVP-like season. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Jared Goff. Whatever order you want to put them in, those are the three leading MVP candidates, right? Josh Allen, too. Yes, Josh Allen, too. Boy, there's four. Mahomes is five. That's the top five quarterbacks in the NFL right now. That's my mini power rankings.
Pretty good list.
It's a pretty good list. All right, so let's get to the fourth quarter. The Bengals get the ball back after Lamar Jackson scores late and puts the Ravens and bails out his porous defense. Goodness sakes, are they bad. I don't know if it was they were that bad or the combination of Burrow and Chase were that good. But regardless, Bengals come down. They do it again. They score. It's 35-34. What were the 38 seconds left? And there's a decision to be made. I think it's an easy decision. I think it's an easy decision. You're on the road. You're rallying. You're losing. You're in the midst of a losing season. And as I just said, Lamar Jackson had 197 passing yards in the fourth quarter. Those aren't typos, right? This is what you were up against. I know that maybe the percentages say kick the extra point. I know Todd Bowles would have kicked the extra point. But we're just coming off this national discussion about what the Buccaneers didn't do and should have done. And they had the Chiefs and all the things.
You're the Bengals. Yeah, you go for the victory. You're 4-6 right now. How are the Bengals 4-6, by the way? How is that team 4-6? So you go for two, and the Bengals went for two.
Looking for the lead. Chase in motion from right to left. Burrow, shotgun. Chase sets up on the left side. Going for two. Snap. Burrow in the pocket. Burrow, soft toss. It is incomplete. Right side throw to Hudson. Fall to the turf. The Ravens stop the Bengals. 35-34. Baltimore in front with 38 seconds to play.
That was it. Incomplete. Unsuccessful. A big fat L. I don't have any problem with the decision to go for two. I do have a little bit of a problem before we get to some of the other things. If I'm going to quibble, and that's what we're here for, we like to quibble. Why would you ignore on the biggest play of the game the receiver who had three touchdowns and 264 receiving yards? I don't care if he's doubled. You throw it up and you let him try to get it. Or you let him run a slant and you wait till he gets open. Or. I don't know why so many offensive coordinators in the NFL, and it's hard to criticize after they came back, all the things, but tend to ignore the obvious. Ja'Marr Chase should have been given that opportunity to pull out that game, and I wonder what he thought after the game.
Do you feel like the ball should have gone to you on that final play?
I always feel like that. As a receiver, you should want the ball, yes, but, you know, sometimes y'all don't see it, you know?
Y'all don't see it. Well, we didn't see the Bengals pull out the victory because the Ravens stopped them on the two-point play. Their defense finally rose up and made a stop. But let's face it, they had some help. They had some help. I think Joe Burrow could. First of all, there was defensive holding on that play, and the broadcast correctly pointed it out, isolated on it, and you saw there's cloth that's being grabbed. I think we could have Mike Pereira on every day, or the morning after every game, that there's a Thursday night game, Monday night game, Sunday night. Officiating seems to be easier to second guess than ever. I think you could say that the morning after every game, national televised game. But there was defensive holding. But what I don't understand is that Joe Burrow, star quarterback, MVP candidate, gets smacked in the face with the face mask, and that goes unchecked. These are the guys that get extra protection, right? Aren't these the guys that the league is trying to make sure stay out of harm's way, or send the message that if you get within sneezing distance, they're going to flag you? Joe Burrow got smacked. No flag. No flag. So I don't know if the Bengals are going to have much sympathy because it was a great comeback and the focus is on what maybe Lamar Jackson did, but and how the Ravens kind of came storming back. The Bengals blew that game, so you don't feel too sorry for them because a lot of things went wrong and they had a lead and they blew it. But that should have been a flag. And the ball should have been put, you know, half the distance to the goal line, and they should have gotten another shot. And they didn't. And I wonder if they would have run the ball then, or if they would have done what I think every self-respecting football fan thought they should have done, including, but it sounds like maybe Ja'Marr Chase. Throw the ball to your best wide receiver. Give him a shot. How are the Bengals 4-6? How are the Bengals 4-6? That's a good football team. Are they out of the playoffs now? Are they done? Will Khalil Herbert bring them back?
Little Khalil Herbert sighting early in that game.
I saw that. Is that going to move the needle for them? Probably
no.
Not. No. It's a team fueled by Burrow and Chase, and boy, are they fun to watch. Lamar Jackson, he's just electric. You run out of words to describe a guy that is capable of having and comes through in the fourth quarter in a way that I can't remember. This is talking off the top of your head, but when was the last time you saw a quarterback that dominant in the fourth quarter with those kind of numbers? Those are video game numbers. Why can't we have some of that in Chicago? Why can't we have stars? Dustin, you mentioned this morning, and you know, I was thinking about it driving in too. It's like, where are those guys? Let's take a quick lap through the city. Wrigley Field. What do we say about the Cubs? They lack stars. They need a star in the lineup. They don't have any superstars. Check. White Sox. Okay. Check. Hawks. Connor Bedard. Star in the making. As Dustin shakes his hand and says, well, maybe iffy. You got to surround him with talent. But I'm saying he could be a star. He doesn't have the gravitas yet. He doesn't have the charismatic swagger that you see in often superstars. And he's not had that game yet this year that makes you say, wow. He makes you say when. More than wow right now. You want to see him do that. But Bedard right now is star in the making. But you're right. Fair enough. He's 19. Not a superstar yet. Check. Bulls. Did you see what they did without Zach LaVine? They gave up 45 points last night to the Minnesota Timberwolves in the fourth quarter. Boy, these games, if you went to bed early, you missed a lot. If you were watching Thursday Night Football and the Bulls flipping back and forth and you said, I'm tired. I'm going to bed. Fourth quarter, what could happen? A lot happened in both fourth quarters. The NFL game was epic, and the Bulls gave up 45 points to a team with what? A superstar. Big Ant, Anthony Edwards. That's what a star looks like. The Bulls, with or without Zach LaVine, don't have one. They don't have a star. They're waiting. I mean, Zach is an all-star. He's playing well, but just when you start to see him playing well, people want to trade him, and people want to trade him anyway. So no, check. Bulls don't have a star. Who'd we leave out? The Bears. Yes, the Bears. Well, you'd like to believe that Caleb Williams is going to be a star and is capable of doing what Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson did in trading turns last night and being the hero. You'd like to believe that's Caleb Williams' next big thing to do, but not yet. I don't think you can identify the 25th rated passer in the NFL as a star. When is Caleb Williams going to be on that list? When I'm rattling off five guys who have MVP type seasons, or
when he gets away from Shane Waldron?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, because now you have to wonder, is it Shane Waldron or is it Caleb Williams?
Which way are you leaning?
I want to lean that it's Shane Waldron, because Bigsy had a great point yesterday talking about the fact that people that really study offense, that break down the tape, and like, the Bears don't have an identity. They have like plays, but they don't have like a game plan when you're watching, like, okay, this is what they're after. This is what they're trying to do. And it's just so obvious.
What's so frustrating about that is that you're right, first of all.
That's frustrating.
That doesn't frustrate me.
We can go back to whether or not they should have gone for two.
I want to get back to that.
Because I'm right and you're wrong, but we can do that later.
I want to get back to that. The one thing about what Bigsy said about Shane Waldron I think is valid. It also is so frustrating if you're a Bears fan, because the rhetoric is and the conversation is so numbingly familiar. Oh gosh, is this 2024 or is this 2019? Is this Shane Waldron or Matt Nagy? And we had a little brief respite because, you know, last 2 years there was Luke Getsy to kick around and his stunted development of Justin Fields that he got blamed a lot for. But the play calling, you'd like to see a scheme in Chicago that is identifiable as a scheme and not just plays called like they're out of a greatest hits album. This is Shane Waldron's greatest hits. They don't really connect or have any rhyme or reason. And the first one you hear, is not necessarily connected to the 15th one you'll hear. There's no progression, and there doesn't seem to be any football logic involved in setting things up, making things happen, and carving out that identity that remains difficult to see or identify midway through his first season. Enough with the process. It is a process. But if I were to vote whether or not the regression, if we're going to call it that, the last 2 weeks, is more related to Caleb Williams being a rookie or Shane Waldron calling the plays, I'm probably going to go with the latter. And I know that people will say, well, you're just a Caleb guy. I remain a Caleb guy. I don't think the offense is doing him any favors. And I don't think the rapport with the receivers is all on him or the lack of chemistry there. You can scheme guys open in ways that we have not seen the Bears scheme guys open. Look around the National Football League. It's happening. So I do think that with improvement in the play calling department, with the scheme department, with an identity, you will see Caleb Williams progress again and ascend to that star status one day, maybe soon, maybe later. But I do think he can be a star. He isn't now. He isn't now. Montez Sweat, yes, he's just about at that level of being star caliber pass rusher defensive lineman. Is he a superstar like Myles Garrett? No. So I think that when you talk about stars on the Bears, you don't have anything of the likes that we saw last night on Thursday Night Football if you watched that game. And if you didn't, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you missed it. It was tremendous, and it was what the NFL had to be loving about that game having all of the attention. And Al Michaels was so happy. Why wouldn't he be? But back to that final play. Why in the world would you kick the extra point? Why would you go into overtime? Did you not learn anything from Todd Bowles, who decided to go into overtime, lost a coin flip, went home a loser?
You put out a really great list to start the show, David, your top five quarterbacks, and your fifth quarterback was actually Patrick Mahomes, who is always number one. I get it right now if you're talking fantasy and statistics, but you don't give the ball to Superman. I get that. The Ravens couldn't stop Burrow and Chase all night. They couldn't do it except for the two-point conversion. It was the only time they really stopped them. So your season is on the line. That's also the difference. Your season is on the line. You kick the extra point, and you then hope that you can get the ball first and go right through that Swiss cheese Ravens pass defense. That's why you kick the extra point. You talked about it. Give yourself an opportunity. Give yourself one more chance. By kicking the extra point, you give yourself one more chance. Listen, if Lamar Jackson runs down the field with 28 seconds left and lines them up for a field goal, okay, well then you know what? Shame on the Bengals defense. But give yourself a chance for the Burrow-Chase connection to go for 4 touchdowns and 500 passing yards.
It's a valid point. And it's a good argument. I'll give you that. But if you are Zach Taylor and you're looking at your defense that just gave up 197 yards and 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, you risk losing the game to a coin flip. And if the Ravens win the coin flip, they win the game. There was no way they were stopping Lamar Jackson as hot as he was.
But I think you could say the same thing, David. If the Bengals win the coin flip, they're winning the game. I think whoever got the ball first in overtime, you're right, is winning the game. But the Bengals season now is in doubt. You just said, how are the Bengals 4-7?
I don't know.
How are the Bengals on the outside looking in to the postseason at this moment?
Are they 4-6?
4-6, 4-7, whatever it takes.
Okay, but they've got 4 victories.
That's a fact.
But my point is that they already won the coin flip. Let's just pretend that they won this imaginary coin flip. They had the ball at the 2-yard line. They had the ball ready to snap, throw, score, and win. That's all you had to do. That's all you had to do. So they won the coin flip in their minds. And if they had gone to overtime and lost the coin flip, they'd be regretting not going for two on the road in a hostile environment against a quarterback in Lamar Jackson that if the Bengals had pulled it out, you would have prevented from stealing a victory, and they passed up on that opportunity. I think he'd have been opening himself to more criticism that he deserved, and the Bengals did what they had to do under those circumstances.
But then they didn't throw the ball to Chase like we talked about. That's the other part of the criticism. So now you wake up, and Chase was better than I expected. You know, as a wide receiver, I always want the ball. Of course, that's you know, Joe Burrow missed it. But did he throw Joe Burrow under the bus there? Joe Burrow missed it. So did he think he was open? I'm just saying, like, you might have lost the locker room last night. Because you went for two and you didn't throw it to Chase.
That's a way to lose the locker room. If you think that people are critical of Shane Waldron in Chicago, I do wonder how critical Bengals fans will be of Zach Taylor in Cincy this morning.
Is there a Bengal fan out there listening right now?
I don't know. We're not going to invite phone calls from Cincinnati. Is Porth a Bengals fan? No, he's not. He's from Cincinnati.
But he's a Titan guy.
Okay. He's a Titan guy. I think if you're upset about play calling, yeah, but I think the offensive coordinator position in the NFL, whoever calls the plays, there's no assistant coach. There's no role that is not a head coach or a manager. There's no role in sports that gets more scrutiny than that. All the eyeballs that NFL has on it every single week, every single game. If you are a play caller for an NFL team, you are number one in the most helpless position. Not helpless, but you aren't the spokesperson of the team. There's only so much within your control, and you know you're going to get criticized. These guys are gluttons for punishment. Speaking of, we heard from Shane Waldron yesterday at Hallis Hall. And we'll get to some of that because I did not hear again many answers that make you feel comfortable and confident going into Sunday. I don't think you feel comfortable or confident going into Sunday against the Patriots. That says as much as you need to about the Bears at this stage of the year. Here we are. The Bears are 4-4, staring at game number 9, playing against the worst team in the league, and you still feel a little skittish about what's going to happen Sunday at the lakefront. So we've got a lot to talk about. We've got some college football we'll look at. Got an elimination game on Saturday. Hawks lost in Dallas. Tyler Bertuzzi had a goal, but that was the only one they had, 3-1. Their back-to-back success is no better than the Bulls' back-to-back success. Been a tough week for the co-tenants of the United Center. We've got baseball to discuss. John Heyman from the MLB Network, our guy, is going to be in studio at 9 o'clock. We've got Mike Palm from Circa. We're going to talk to him at 8:40. Grody. How was Grody yesterday with Ruthie? Heard a little bit about it. Grody and Ruthie, they have fun. They know their stuff. And, of course, get your pencils out and your scorecards ready. Joe Fortenbaugh at 7:40. And, of course, Biggs time at 7. We'll talk to him about a lot of things. We got a great show. Mully's out today, but we are here for you. The Pick 6 is next on Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy, shipped nationwide.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was Shane Waldron trying to say when he spoke of Caleb Williams' regression?
Yeah, I think for Caleb, every week is going to be a new set of circumstances that he's dealing with, different defensive structures, different blitz patterns, all the things that play out. And so for him, each week, you know, just continue to work playing clean eyes, clean feet, playing fast in the pocket right there. And it's something that, looking through all the different young quarterbacks, there have been some ups and downs as the process has taken place. And the thing that gives me all the confidence in the world in Caleb is his dedication to his craft, the way he comes into work every single day. And so we'll keep working and coaching him and the guys surrounding him, working their butts off to get this thing going and get it going in a consistent manner.
Actually, what do you think Shane Waldron was trying to say overall? Does anybody know?
I think he's talking in generalities, like a coach who wants to maintain a positive approach and keep everybody positive and headed in the right direction. But it's frustrating for Bears fans because you want to hear things that are more solution-oriented and not things that are more like empty platitudes or the feel-good coach speak that is rooted in optimism. You can get optimistic about things once you start to see results. I think you want to hear more from your offensive coordinator about why there aren't those results and maybe have him break down some of the things that are solutions, potential solutions to getting Caleb Williams out of this two-game funk that he's in. And let's be clear, it's only a two-game funk as I see it. He was 2 weeks ago trending in the right direction, returning from London, and we were talking about a guy whose passer rating was something to brag about. Now we're like, well, we're not hearing enough details about what's wrong with him and how to fix it. I question, and I think we're all looking for, I question whether or not Shane Waldron knows how to fix it. I don't have a ton of confidence midway through his first season as a play caller that he's going to be able to get out of his own way. I don't know what we heard yesterday, except for a offensive coordinator, a football coach, trying to cling to something and clinging to something that feels familiar, and that is the work ethic and commitment of his players, the potential and talent of his quarterback, and the only place he can look after a 4-4 start is ahead, and he's trying to make it seem like things are going to get better. Well, you know what? On Sunday, they better get better.
Well, quoting one of your favorite shows, David, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
Yeah, right?
I think he almost went there. I think he almost went there yesterday. He also had a funny quote that I was talking to Brandon about cleats. You know, you basically, Eberflus likes to say you are where your feet are, and Waldron went a little further in talking about, you know, we are where our cleats are. You know, our cleats are in the grass, and Eberflus happy that the Bears are back on the grass, and we're back on the grass today. It's important to be on the grass. I have no idea what the mumbo jumbo is that Shane Waldron. I mean, you need a special decoder. Can we hire somebody from Seattle? To explain what they heard out of this guy. I mean, boy, he's got a tough job, and it's going to continue to get tough because no matter what happens this week on Sunday, he's still not going to be clear because you're expecting Caleb Williams to throw all over a bad New England Patriot defense. And if he doesn't, you're going to kill him. And if he does, he gets no credit. So again, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose, David. That's my interpretation.
Fired up now.
That's what I heard. That's what it sounded like to me. It sounded the Charlie Brown's teacher thing. Womp, 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 womp. It's this. The same old stuff. It's coach speak.
That's great.
I mean, the regression, I took it as if I can decode it, you know, Caleb's a rookie. He's going to have ups and downs, you know, take time. And it's also saving itself, too, because, like, you can't knock him down because then they're already coming at you as well. And, you know, of course, he's going to, you know, little things in his presser he did kind of you know, take some accountability. But they all been taking accountability. I mean, this has been a lot of – we're tired of, like, blaming themselves with – We talked about it earlier with Matt Eberflus. That's on me. Now I heard Eric Washington. We played stuff from him saying, you know, the run defense, that it starts with me. I'm just tired of it. Like, I'm with you, David. I want to see solutions. Just talk about what can we do solution wise, rather than, oh yeah, yeah, it's regression and maybe it's this and this and that. I don't care. Just tell me the solutions and what can we do to fix it.
And that's the big question, right?
That's right, Brad. The Bigs time will be at 7 this morning with David. Which quarterback Sunday will have the better game and why? And what is the key to getting Caleb Williams off the bad track he seems to be on over the last 2 weeks?
Well, I think that those are two different questions, I think. Because I want to believe that Caleb Williams could get on track and use a quick passing game, use a no huddle, be accurate, go down the field, maybe catch a mismatch. Maybe DJ Moore and him will be on the same wavelength and he can have a good game. And I think that would be enough. But I do think some people will be looking at this as head-to-head, just like it was Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams, and it'll be Drake May versus Caleb Williams because it's rookie v. rookie, and Caleb Williams should win that matchup and win that battle at home on a better team, especially if he wins the game. But not so fast, my friend. Drake May, excuse me, Drake May all of a sudden is having the kind of year that, or he had one kind of game that reminded people in New England what makes him special. And a guy like Hunter Henry, a veteran, was talking about the special in Drake May, the way that we're talking in Chicago about the special in Caleb Williams. Drake May was very good last week. Now, it came in a loss, and it wasn't something that, you know, they lose to the Titans. You don't come away, you know, satisfied with anything. But he did have 206 yards passing, 70% completion percentage, and 95 rushing yards. That's the one thing with Drake May we are not paying attention to. He had 95 rushing yards and the third most by a Patriots quarterback. The last time this happened and a Patriots quarterback was this versatile, able to do that, 1976. You have to be of a certain age to remember good old Steve Grogan. I think he was a quarterback that wore a neck roll at one point. And maybe I had a football card like that.
Gotta love a quarterback wearing a neck roll.
Gotta love that. Anyway, Drake May, back to him. The future, the present. The Patriots quarterback on Sunday. He better not outplay Caleb Williams. It's not him versus him, quarterback versus quarterback, but he is not to be taken lightly, and that's the biggest takeaway.
Well, David, the doomsday scenario is Drake May rolling into Soldier Field and outplaying Caleb Williams. That is the doomsday for everybody involved, because did Jaden Daniels outplay him, right? Jaden Daniels had the better day, of course, because they won the game. At the end, it's all about wins and losses. I mean, Caleb had a nice little comeback, right? He had a couple of wow throws, but again, got off to an ice cold start. So if another quarterback from this quarterback class outplays him on Sunday, look out on Monday. Okay, look out. We may as well cancel all the guests and just not even screen the calls. Just as they come in, we can just hit them. Just hit them and take them right on the air.
Who's going to tell Olin?
I'll tell him out at Peyton's place out on Sunday with Circus Sports Illinois. We're out there with Flagship on the Fox, David. Thanks for asking.
I mean, this is going to be tough because I'm kind of scared of this game because – if you do get outplayed by Drake May, you already got outplayed by Jaden Daniels, which, by the way, did you see, like, his Hail Mary is now in the Hall of Fame museum?
It's no.
In there now. Yes.
I did not see that.
I saw a tweet where it's out in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, goodness.
So that just
that's
more
great.
Slap
Wonderful.
To, yeah. Slap in the face of Bears fans.
Tyreek Stevenson immortalized.
I think with this, you need to really get going in that first drive. That's another thing, too. I would like to see some, you know, don't go for the big play all the time. Like, you know, if it's right there, take the smart, easy play, the dink and dunk, the quick 5 yard, boom, boom, boom. Either Cole Kmet, DJ Moore. You know, you love those screen pass. Give it to Swift. Get something going in that first drive. I think that will give him a little confidence going in with Caleb Williams. And if you do that, then you're going on your way. But with that being said, like I say, I'm still very concerned about this game because it is a good possibility that Drake May can outplay Caleb Williams in this one.
Yes. Hey, well, here's another question.
That is the voice of Mark Rohde, who was sitting in yesterday for you guys, David, and he will be here 8:25, emptying out that Bears notebook. What did you think of Montez Sweat's explanation for the shin injury?
Went through the workout. My position coach and Hose, they assess me and they make a decision. But yeah, I just do the workout, do what I'm told.
Did you feel like you could go?
It's not my decision.
How is it feeling now relative to that?
I'm much better. I'm practicing this week. I didn't really practice at all last week. So yeah.
So the strength issue?
It's more like a contusion.
Yeah.
So it's just basically just getting the swelling out, getting the range of motion back in there.
And how much of an impact will Sweat have this Sunday at the lakefront?
This is where I need talked off the ledge or need some perspective. I'm seeking perspective here. I heard that yesterday and I didn't necessarily agree that it's always up to his bosses. I don't know that that's kind of the stuff of legends, if you will. We talk about stars, we talk about superstars, we talk about legends. If they held him out of the game, okay, it's a late October game, early November game, whatever, doesn't mean anything. I don't know why, but I felt like I wanted him to sound more ticked off about being held out of that game. And at the time, I wish he would have maybe done a little bit more to get himself into that game. I realize how irrational that might sound, and I don't want to be irrational. But when he describes it as a contusion, and it was just something about getting the swelling down, I think you wonder about the lengths to which some people have gone that has become the stuff of legends in Chicago and other NFL cities to play through whatever they're playing through. And this was never in any jeopardy of becoming the legend of Montez Sweat and how he played through the pain of last week's shin injury or contusion because he was fearful of more injury. I wish that there was something worse wrong with him because I want to believe that he is their best defensive player. He's going to make an impact on Sunday. They'll probably be able to win because of something he does, and this will all sound silly. But I do wish he would have played last week after hearing what it came down to and how he left it up to his bosses. It's not his decision, but don't you weigh the player's input heavily into such a thing? And don't you want your guy to tell me, like, have the confidence that he could play? That might be wildly unfair, but I found the explanation somewhat disappointing.
Beep, beep, beep. That's the dump truck running over his boss, Ryan Poles, right now. Are you kidding me? This has to be addressed. David, this has to be addressed. Your season was on the brink. So Ryan Poles is so in love with his roster. He's so enthralled with his defense that he was willing to sit one of his two blues because he had a shin contusion? Oh. You ever heard of Jack Youngblood?
Yeah,
1979.
Broken
played
leg.
In a Super Bowl
broken
with
leg.
A broken leg?
Yes, I do.
Played in a... I understand this wasn't the Super Bowl. And I understand the Bears won't be playing in the Super Bowl, which I believe is in that stadium in February, right? The Super Bowl is in Arizona this year, or is it New Orleans? I forget, but...
New Orleans.
They played a lot
Tom
of...
Tom Brady's going to be there.
They played
Remember?
A lot of Super Bowls in Arizona yeah. on that field. Okay, Jack Youngblood would have played. Okay, you wrap a little tape around it, put on one of them soccer-style shin guards, okay, and you go out there and you play. Are you kidding me? A shin contusion, Ryan Poles evaluated me, not my choice, not my... What's going on over there? So the Bears would leave the franchise player on the field with 5 minutes to go. He can't be protected by anybody, okay? Not protected by any... They leave him out there, but they don't want to put the defensive end, Montez Sweat, out there because of a contusion? Give me a break.
608 says, do you really believe it's up to the player? The coach decides who plays, period. You didn't mention the coach. You mentioned Ryan Poles. I don't know that you ever discount the player's input into it either. I think you got to. And then one more before we get to Brandon. 847. David, did you call in yesterday to take care of personal stuff and not show up to work? Isn't that a little hypocritical, don't you think? Come on now.
Did you have a contusion, David?
Really? Oh,
did you
have a contusion? Oh, I'm limping. I do now. I now have
does
a toe
Mully,
injury.
Does Mully have a contusion?
I know. Come on, man.
Did really? Did Mitch Rosen evaluate Mully's contusion and decide that Mully needed to stay home? Give me a break.
No.
So, I love Dustin's, by the way, his voice, the little shin contusion.
I love that. Yeah.
So, I think when he said it's not my decision, me and Dustin was just talking about it back here. Remember, earlier, who also said it's not my decision? Caleb Williams, when he stayed in late. This is creating that whole, to me, where you're seeing that conversation of, are the players, is there a divide in the locker room? Are they not trusting the coaching staff? Like, what's going on? Because he was like, it's not my decision. I think if it was up to him, he would play. I know you got to do what's best for the player. I mean, he's one of your best players. He's going to make an impact in this game. I think he will help out Dexter a lot more, too. So just him, his presence alone will help that pass rush. And that's what you need. And remember, look at that defense before Montez Sweat. So I think the explanation is something that I think, like Dustin said, it's something to talk about, and it's something to really, like, I would ask those coaches about that, too. And I think he's definitely going to make an impact for this team, and they need him.
Oh, my God, what a question. What a question.
Voice of Joe Fortenbaugh, get that pencil sharpened, get that paper out. Joe's here at 740. How do we feel about the Bulls after their back-to-back games against the Mavs and the T-Wolves? Is it good or bad for the Bulls that every night you can come away with a different impression?
They're up and down. You see some signs of growth and progress you like, and then you watch them play defense, and it stinks. 45 points in the fourth quarter. I don't know that you're going to win many games that way. Maybe that's by design, but it's very frustrating as a Bulls fan to watch this team, and it's even harder to watch them without Zach LaVine and Lonzo Ball. Because they need both those guys, because they struggle to defend in the paint. Very quietly, Vooch is having a strong, strong year. And you like what you see from Vooch, but you don't necessarily like some other things about how easy it is for other teams to score when they flip a switch. And certainly the T-Wolves and Big Ant flipped a switch in the fourth quarter last night. You don't like some other things just about the post defense, and let me check the statistics here. Yes, Patrick Williams played 31 points and did not have a rebound. How does that happen? How do you play 31 minutes and be as tall and athletic as Patrick Williams is and not fall into a rebound? The Bulls are confounding. There's some things that you enjoy, and then there's the rest of the stuff. Matez Bezelis, he's a rookie. I don't want to pick on him because he's up, he's down. You expect that. I'd like to see more consistency from the rest of the Bulls. But on back-to-back nights without Zach LaVine, that was a tough challenge with the Mavs and the T-Wolves, two teams that might be in the Western Conference Finals. So I don't want to overreact either.
Again, right? I mean, didn't the Mavs and T-Wolves play in the Western Conference Finals last year? The Mavs took care of them and moved on to play in the NBA Finals. Listen, those are two of the better teams. The West is better than the East in the NBA. And as we talked about in the first segment of the show, the Bulls lack stars. They just lack stars. There's for sure two and maybe three guys on the T-Wolves roster that are better than everybody on the Bulls roster. And that's not a recipe to win a game.
I mean, I expected them to lose. Like I said, those are two tough teams. I'm looking at this. I remember the report that I think we saw, I think this week, where they said the Bulls are trying to shop Vucevic and LaVine. I mean, honestly, anybody is available on this team. There's no, like, untouchables on this team. The only kid I would probably want to keep is Bouzelis and just see his growth and get his minutes. But Dustin said this before we started the show, you trade Zach LaVine off this team and they're probably a bottom five team. And honestly, I mean, see what you can get for him. Anything. I mean, I don't care. At least there would be a plan in place, because right now, I don't know what this is.
Wow, that's a good question.
That's the voice of John Heyman. He'll be in studio with David this morning at 9 a.m. How much do you believe in Michael Bush as a long-term answer at first base? And why do you think Jed Hoyer made it clear so publicly that Bush will stay rather than trying him as an option in the light of Nico Horner's offseason surgery?
Well, that's a curious one. First of all, I think we all have kind of overlooked that Nico Horner underwent flexor tendon surgery. And his timetable might be spring training, maybe not. But there's going to be a question mark surrounding his status and his maybe ability to return to being the kind of player he is. Maybe not. But I think that whatever the case is, very seldom do you see players traded who are coming off of surgeries. And if people were expecting Nico Horner to be at the center of a lot of trade rumors this offseason, that might change because of this surgery and injury. So perhaps Michael Bush was being solidified publicly by Jed Hoyer to make it seem like the Cubs believe in him in case they were to engage in any sort of trade conversations involving him. Well, they must really be serious about wanting whoever it is, if they're going to dangle a guy that they just publicly committed to. I'm not quite sure if leverage is in play. I like Michael Bush, but again, if you are asking me would I'd rather have Pete Alonso or Michael Bush at first place, give me the star capable of hitting 50 homers at Wrigley Field, rather than the guy who had a very strong and promising rookie season.
Totally agree, David. I mean, Michael Bush is—he's fine. He's adequate, fine and adequate. That's what the Commanders are. That's what the Twins are. Fine and adequate. The Rays down in Tampa, fine and adequate. Maybe the Texas Rangers. This is supposed to be Chicago. Michael Bush as your first baseman, not good enough. Again, lack of stars. You got a $25 million right field first baseman DH that decided to take $25 million because nobody else was, even Scott Boras knew, nobody else was going to give his client $50, $75, $80 million over the next 2 to 3, 4 seasons. That just wasn't happening. And I'm fine having Cody Bellinger back. This isn't a slight on Cody Bellinger, but that's just one guy. You need at least three. How many $25 million plus players do the Mets, Dodgers, and Yankees have? Okay, more than one.
Right.
And Dansby Swanson's what, a $19 million a year guy?
Yeah.
Right? You know, they're just guys. They're just, Michael Bush is the only flexibility you have. You can't trade Nico Horner now. This would be trading Nico Horner at his lowest value of all time.
Right.
Wouldn't make any sense to trade Nico Horner right now. Michael Bush is the only thing you got. So, of course, Jed's down there in San Antonio polishing this guy up.
I want to give Bush a little bit more credit. I think he had probably a better than expected year than most of us. I don't think anybody expected much from Michael Bush, and I think he kind of exceeded that expectation a little bit. But with that being said, I think Cody Bellinger opting in is the reason I feel like, well, now Bush has to stay at first base. Because if Bellinger didn't, then we can move Bush around. Maybe he could play DH and second base and first base and move him around. And then we can look for that Pete Alonso move. And I think because of Bellinger opting in, I think that kind of kills their plans on probably some position players, and you're going to just be looking now at maybe a starting pitcher or two for the Cubs.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What college football matchup do you want to see the most over the weekend? And did the release of the 12-team playoff rankings this week pique your curiosity in any team the great of the season?
Well, I think that made me want to see Indiana-Michigan even more. Some people feel like Indiana's a little bit underrated at number 8, but Notre Dame Florida State is a
Can
game.
You ever remember this game having absolutely 0.0 buzz, David?
No.
There is nothing.
Well, that's Florida State's fault. They have stunk this year. Now it's a primetime matchup. You can see what they wanted it to be. 6:30 tomorrow night in South Bend, Florida State Notre Dame. When you schedule that game, you're thinking like epic performance, your Shades of 93, the game of the century, Charlie Ward and all those things and the tradition and Bobby Bowden, Lou Holtz, and then Florida State's terrible. Notre Dame needs this victory, though. They can't even struggle. I think Notre Dame is almost like playing for style points. Marcus Freeman is very good coming out of the bye. So let's see what they can do. Indiana Michigan's intriguing. I am very curious at the elimination game when we talk about the college football playoff, when you have LSU and Alabama. Winner under consideration, loser goes home. Isn't that going to be the reality? That's one of those games where Alabama LSU, that is 6:30 on Saturday night opposite Notre Dame, Florida State. I think that's a more attractive game to me, even though I like watching the Irish.
I'm here with my family.
Speaking of the Irish and speaking of LSU, the great Brian Kelly, everybody. My game, David, is at 2:30 opposite your Michigan-Indiana game, and that is Georgia at Ole Miss. I am not impressed with this Georgia quarterback. I am impressed with the Georgia defense. This could really shake things up. If Ole Miss can pull off this upset, they all of a sudden are in the picture, and Georgia is hanging by a thread, because that would be now a two-loss Georgia team and a two-loss Ole Miss team, plus your elimination game that you're talking about. You can't have five teams from the SEC in this thing. So I think I'm going to say Georgia Ole Miss is as much of an elimination game as LSU Alabama, if especially Ole Miss is able to win. But I am curious. I mean, Michigan is still Michigan, and when they come into Bloomington, that's a huge, huge game.
It's a litmus test game.
Litmus test is a great way to put it.
I'm going to be going back and forth. Dustin kind of stole my thunder. Ole Miss, Georgia, 2:30. That's the one I want to watch. I like Ole Miss. I can see an upset there. I'm not saying it will be an upset, but possible. And then the Michigan-Indiana one. I'm watching that one. I'm really intrigued. I want to watch more of Indiana. I wasn't watching them much this, you know, college football season. I've been seeing a little bit from them. And like I said, Dustin's right. Michigan is still Michigan. So I'm very intrigued to see that Indiana offense go against Michigan's defense. So that's one I'm definitely going to check out. Notre Dame, I do not want to see Notre Dame. No, if they're going to win, they're a 26-point favorite. I know Florida State is god-awful, and Notre Dame should win. If it's close, shame on Notre Dame. And I know you're going to say, oh, I'm just bashing on Notre Dame. Look, I know Dustin loves Notre Dame. I know you love Notre Dame. You love Notre Dame. You love Notre Dame. Evan Thomas loves Notre Dame. I'm sorry. Overrated.
Wow. Bringing the muscle. I think Indiana could beat Michigan, too.
I love Notre Dame.
Yeah, I know you do. If Indiana can hit the three-pointer, I think they can beat Michigan. How is it that Indiana football has just become what it's become? That's a crazy season. I don't want to dwell on it, but Cignetti, what he has done in Bloomington, nobody wins there. This is being compared to 95 Northwestern. Remember that when Gary Barnett took the purple to Pasadena?
I do.
Coach of the year. Should be coach of the year.
But they beat. I was at the game working. I just started working. I was at the game. Northwestern beat Joe Pa and Penn State in Evanston. It was an unbelievable game. And I never thought that I would be covering Northwestern beating Penn State and Joe Paterno.
I was there.
He was there too.
He was there too. And Sunday, I don't know if it will be an unbelievable game on the lakefront with Bears and Patriots, but we will predict the outcome next. It'll be our extra point here on the Mullen Haw Show, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. This is football. Enough with the gobbledygook. Remind us what that looks like on the lakefront. Shove it down their throat. Hit them in the mouth. 27-19. Welcome back. It's Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully out today. But he did send me his prediction so he could get on the board. I don't know if he'll change his mind before Sunday. He likes to make fun of himself. Sometimes he's prone to changing his mind. But I think he's locked in. 2017 Bears, he says. 2017. So we are in agreement the Bears will win on Sunday. We are in agreement that it is a must win for this football team that is reeling right now. What do you think? 312-644-6767. Let's go out to the phone lines. Chris is in Champaign. Chris, welcome to Mullen Haw.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Enjoy your show. Hey, so I blame two people for this season. I blame Poles and I blame Williams. One, I blame Poles because I believe he took the wrong quarterback. I wanted Daniels. I think he took. I think he made the lazy choice without doing his homework. Two, I blame Williams because how many throws in a game in the NFL do you get where the big play is there, Waldron schemed that play, and Williams doesn't make the throw? I can think of three or four plays that one of them was DJ Moore where he threw him out of bounds. Another one was he's just not accurate. And to me, Williams is the reason for the loss of the season. So
thanks, Chris.
To what you guys have to say.
That's a lot to put on one guy's shoulders. I will agree with you. It's a fair point that Caleb Williams needs to be more accurate, especially on the downfield throws. Those are open receivers. He is missing them. You can't put that all on Shane Waldron. I would say that if you're splitting the blame pie between Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams, I still think it's probably more 70-30 Waldron to Williams. I just don't know that I'm going to let him off the hook that easily. Let's squeeze in Adam, who's on the road. Adam, welcome to Mullen Haw.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me. The most frustrating part as a lifelong Bears fan is, you know, the losing continues, but the problem is they're not learning from their losses. And another piece that I would say is that I give Williams until halftime, and then if things aren't going well, out he goes. Put in Bajent.
Wow.
That's all I got to say.
Adam, thanks for the phone call. That's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. I'm blaming Dustin for this. I'm blaming Dustin for this idea that does not have anywhere. We're, from here on out, after this segment, we will not mention it or speak of it again. Tyson Bagent is not going to replace Caleb Williams this season unless there's an injury.
An injury to who? To only to Caleb? And why would that injury occur? Because he's playing behind a makeshift offensive line that cannot take care of him. And then the Bears are putting him in a shotgun without even a running back around to maybe kind of sort of try to pick somebody up after the offensive line whiffs on him. So they're protecting him from himself. That's what you're doing. It's like what the Bulls are doing right now with Zach LaVine. I'm not saying Caleb Williams doesn't want to be out there, but at some point you have to protect your franchise from yourself because you can't get it done.
Is it a worthy conversation piece for Brad Biggs? We will ask him next. It's Biggs time on Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Morning, gang. What's going on?
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy, shipped nationwide.